The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots to get to on today's program. The Attorney General, William Barr, has weighed in on the IG report. A couple of interviews, some fascinating interviews, as always, as it always is with Mr. Barr. We'll get to quite a few of those sound bites coming up later on today's show in this segment. Also, of course, the Democrats came out, a very somber scene with Adam Schiff and Gerald Nadler in front of the microphone, surrounded by their Democratic colleagues as they announced the articles of impeachment. And I guess we'll get a vote on that within the next week or so. We'll also talk some about, despite all of this, these attacks, this sham of an impeachment, we'll talk about the rising popularity of President Donald Trump. He had another big rally last night in Hershey, Pennsylvania. I think he filled up an arena of about 12,500. So there's no signs of him losing any of his support. If anything, it's just the opposite. Speaking of his popularity and the impeachment sham, Horowitz, who came out with the report, David Horowitz, or Michael, I guess, Mike Horowitz, he came out with the report on Monday. He's due to testify today, so it'll be interesting to see if there's anything else that comes out of that hearing. Of course, the report itself is something like 450 pages, so as far as I'm concerned, there's plenty of information already to cover and to go through. It's not like we need any more. One little programming note, we've got Trumpet Hour coming up today. Following this program, Joel Hilliker is going to be talking about what our public schools are teaching our children and how so much of the agenda, and it is an agenda, it's about radicalizing our young people. They know, educators know, that if they can get the next generation to embrace their leftist views, well, that's going to go a long way toward establishing the society that they want. We've talked before about that 1619 project, the New York Times spearheading that, and just how much, basically, to point out all of America's sins and to go all the way back even before the nation became a nation, to talk about how it's just grounded in slavery and all these other original sins. And we've noted that with respect to that project, the people working on it there at the Times, they desperately want to get it into the school system. They want this taught in public schools. These educators, they know that if they can implant these concepts early, they can reshape our society. Mr. Hilliker is going to talk about how really does underscore the importance of our role as parents to make sure that we are, in fact, serving as our children's primary educators, not just providers. We're not here to just give them a place to live and to make sure that they have food every time they sit down at the table. But we have to counteract these trends in society today. And we have to teach our children the truth, whether it's the truth as revealed in the Bible or just the truth of what we see as we watch world events. Because there's so much, as the president often says, there's so much that's fake, that's not true at all. And so we've got to know the truth, as Jesus said, and if we know it, the truth will set us free. Well, we're coming into a period of elections, of course, one here in the UK tomorrow, but there's quite a lot about the elections. Whether it's the UK election here tomorrow or the election next year in the US. Now Israel, There's a story here from the AP. Israeli lawmakers submit bill for third election in less than a year. So last night, I believe, was the deadline for forming a government. And since there's no end to this political crisis in Israel, parliament is disbanded, and now they're having another election, the third one in less than a year. You hear all of this about elections and such. I was just reading on the way up here, or when I settled in here in the studio, that verse in Romans 13 and verse 1 where it says, "Let every soul be subject to the higher powers, for there is no power but of God." See, it's God the Father who has the ultimate authority, even in what we cherish as our democracy, you know, the people having their say. This is important to keep in mind. When we talk about the Jeroboam end, or when we talk about the Antiochus administration before Jeroboam came along, God is the one. There's no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. God has a say. God influences these elections in the direction that will fulfill his will. And that's something that we want to keep in mind. Even as we head into the UK election tomorrow, we don't know what will happen for sure. We have been commenting on just how many people are somewhat terrified of a Corbyn government. I think it was yesterday's show when we talked about the successful entrepreneurs who are considering leaving the country if he's voted in. There's a piece at the Telegraph headline, "The only thing that could make this horrible election campaign worse is a Corbyn victory." That's the only thing that would make it worse. It says, "What a horrible election. Far too long, scrappy, fractious, yet timid, nerve-wracking, childish, tedious, exhausting, scary, vindictive, ugly. It feels like the Hundred Years' War. Can they just make it stop?" The only thing that can make it worse, as this author says, is a Corbyn victory. There was a Labour front bencher, a prominent Labour member, who I guess he was recorded as saying that Jeremy Corbyn represented a threat to the UK's national security. So that can't be good for the Corbyn campaign. And yet, from what we're reading, the race is supposedly tight. We can't always believe the polls these days. But evidently, it's a tight race heading into tomorrow, and we'll have a fair bit more to say about it, if not on tomorrow's show, but on Friday as well. I thought this headline, too, from The Spectator. We've talked so much about the resurgence in the United States. This one here says, "Are UK markets heading for a Boris bounce?" The Spectator says, "That is the clear expectation of Goldman Sachs, which last week suggested that there was £150 billion worth of investment poised to be poured into Britain in the event of a Conservative government succeeding in bringing a close to the uncertainty over Brexit." Boris Johnson, of course, wants to end it. He was filmed. He's putting out quite a few funny promos. He was filmed in a bulldozer taking down a brick wall saying, "Let's make Brexit happen. Let's get through this gridlock. Let's get through this brick wall." Of course, he had the parody, I guess, yesterday, poking fun at Hugh Grant in one of his movies, I guess, as he advertised, again, some of his policies. Richard sent us a video as well, him showing up at the front door of one of the British voters with a carton of chocolate milk and other beverages. So he's all over. He's pulling out all the stops. He's quite the performer. And, of course, the United States right now is headed up by quite the performer as well. Everywhere he goes, he just draws large throngs of people. This is from PJ Media. "Three states that went for Donald Trump in 2016, devastating Democrats, are poised to do it again if the results of a new poll hold up." says President Donald Trump beats every Democrat in the three key battleground states of Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, according to this new Optimus poll, it says here. Across the board, President Trump is polling well against the Democratic field in each of these battleground states. Notably, Vice President Biden has seen a sharp decline in support in our surveys as he currently runs behind President Trump in each of the three states. These battleground states, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Pennsylvania, of course, is where he was campaigning last night. Another huge rally, not just 12,000 inside, but thousands of people on the outside of that arena as well. Just hoping that they could get a little piece of it. I thought I'd start not with the Pennsylvania rally, but just to go back to, you can thank Sam for this. He's the one that flagged it for me this morning. But just to go back to this speech that the president gave in Florida on Saturday night, where he talked mostly about U.S. relations with Israel. He was speaking there in front of a Jewish audience. But then he talked some about his history as a builder, as a man in construction, basically, a real estate mogul. And then his switch 3-4 years ago to the world of politics. Listen to what the president said Saturday night, clip one.
Some people said, are you a better builder or a better politician? And I thought I was going to say builder because I really was good, you know? I built good. And then I said to myself, well, let's see, I was a good builder. I was very successful. I did a great job, not a build. But then I got into politics. And I only ran once and I became president. So I guess I'm a better politician. Right? I don't know. Maybe I'm a better politician. I don't know. Maybe I'm a better politician. I don't know. But I'm a good builder.
Now, obviously, there's an element of vanity to that statement, but there's also an element of truth to it. He decides to get into politics just the one time, and he's voted into the most powerful office on earth, the President of the United States. And you think about some of the people that he's going up against. Well, in 2016, it was Hillary Clinton for the second time. And now there's people urging her to give it a go another time, a third time. Some of these people, like Joe Biden, they've been in politics for 30 and 40 years. Trying to take down this president, who happens to be super popular, and he's just a businessman. He came right out of left field in 2015, the moment he came down that escalator. And yet his message resonated with a lot of people. It certainly did. He goes direct to the people. I saw a clip of one of the voters that attended the rally in Pennsylvania. Well, three women, I guess. It was raining. They had their raincoats on, and they had come from all of these boroughs around New York City, from Brooklyn and other places that far away. They went all the way to Pennsylvania just so that they could see President Trump, just so that they could attend a 90-minute rally. And this journalist says, well, why, you know, what's your interest? Why would you come all this way? And the lady said, he loves America. And we love him. We can't wait to vote for him next time. He has a lot of enthusiastic support. And one of them said, please, please don't stop tweeting. Keep tweeting to us. His opponents, of course, hate this. They hate his popularity. They hate the fact that he was an outsider. They hate the fact that he comes into politics one time after teasing people for probably 30 years. Yeah, well, maybe I'll get into it. I really don't want to, but we'll see. And then finally he gets in. He's all in 2016, and he wins it. He wins it. Well, God was working in mysterious ways, as we know from Romans 13:1. It's interesting. I have the Churchill class later this afternoon. And there's this point where Churchill lost this job he had with the Evening Standard. And it was in 1938, of all times, to be sacked He's just telling the truth after the Anschluss. Hitler devours Czechoslovakia. And Churchill sounds the alarm. And the editors at the Evening Standard decide, well, you know what? We really don't agree with you. We don't agree with your message. So we're going to fire you. And it was a syndicated column. So this was Churchill's main platform to reach the world. I think it was 50 newspapers. And that's how he got his message out. But I think this is in Gilbert's book, The Prophet of Truth. He talks about how that this syndication manager later wrote to Churchill saying that, you know, look, we're getting all of these letters of response to your being fired coming from the ordinary people who loved your articles. They loved your message. The editors, the educators, the scholars, they hated Churchill. But Churchill, he really did rally the people. He got his message out to the ordinary British citizens. And there's a lot to be said for that. We've talked about it before with respect to Dr. Mazar and the work that we have in Judah. Going around the esteemed educators of today. And to take the message direct to the people. Herbert Armstrong was a master at this. He went right to the airwaves on radio, and it was the same thing. He just spoke to the average, ordinary American citizen and said, don't believe me, believe your Bible. And don't believe the theologians either. Look into what your Bible says. We have a message very similar to that as well today. Everything that this work does, nobody comes into, whether it's the department, you know, over radio or editorial or what. We have some very skilled and professional people, obviously. But so many of them, mostly all of them, if not all of them, have learned on the job. They've learned by doing. So here's a president who just goes direct to the people, whether it's through Twitter or what. They start pulling all these stunts in the White House press room, Jim Acosta and whoever else. And he says, all right, fine. We'll just stop with these press conferences and I'll just go and talk to the press direct myself when I'm on my way to the helicopter. I'll go out to the gaggle of reporters and I'll speak for myself. I don't need a press secretary to do it for me. He just goes out there and the cameras are rolling and he's off and running. And he's received, well, look at these campaigns. Look at these rallies. This was the rally. Keep in mind, this was a rally in Pennsylvania on the day, this is historic, the media told us. The day the articles of impeachment were announced. Oh, what a dark and foreboding day this is. And he goes to Pennsylvania a few hours later, and people are just, they're traveling in from all over the Northeast. Wildly popular. He's more popular in the swing states now than he was then, 2016. You can see why Adam Schiff and Gerald Nadler and Nancy Pelosi. You can see why they're doing anything and everything that they can to try to destroy him because they know they can't win next November. Here's Adam Schiff yesterday explaining why we can't wait. We can't wait for 11 months. We can't wait for the American people to sort this out. We have to take action now. We have to impeach this president now. And here's Schiff's reasoning, clip two.
The argument, why don't you just wait, amounts to this. Why don't you just let him cheat in one more election? Why not let him cheat just one more time? Why not let him have foreign help just one more time? That is what that argument amounts to.
It amounts to, why not let him cheat one more time? So here we are resurrecting the Russia collusion story, the Russia collusion narrative. Never mind the Mueller report. Never mind the Mueller testimony from July 24th that supposedly put all that to rest. We had moved on, right? Ukraine was the next day. But no, he said, this is as he's announcing the articles of impeachment. Why not wait? Why not let America decide in the next election? Well, we can't because he'll cheat again. In other words, he cheated in 2016 and he's going to cheat again. And we've got to run him out of office now or else we're going to be cheated. That's a pretty obvious admission, what you just heard there, of the real reasoning behind these articles of impeachment. Nothing mentioned about the bribery, the extortion, all the things they were talking about a few weeks ago, quid pro quo. They're drafting articles of impeachment. What is it? Abuse of power and obstruction of Congress? He's in a fight with Congress? They can't wait because, well, he's taken some matters to court. And they've had to wait a few months. We can't wait for the judicial system to sort anything out, says Schiff. We've got to act now. They're so desperate. They're resurrecting the Russia collusion hoax. It lives. It was dead, but now it lives again. We can't let him. We can't let him continue because he'll cheat like he did in 2016. This is the same man, as the president pointed out in Pennsylvania last night, that got in front of the microphones and said he had the goods. He had seen the evidence of Russian collusion, and he was going to expose it to the world. Well, that never happened. Here's the president last night mocking Adam Schiff and what he promised a couple years back. Clip three.
He comes up to a microphone. No, he comes up to a microphone like 2.5 years ago. I have absolute proof that the president of the United States conspired with Russia. Russia? What the do I have to do with Russia? By the way, Russia wishes that Hillary Clinton won. They wish. We are now number one in the world in energy. Russia's number three. We're beating now Russia and Saudi Arabia. You'd have windmills all over the place if you had crooked Hillary. They'd be knocking out those birds left and right. Those windmills, wah, wah, wah.
That's the president last night having some fun with the Trump supporters, 12,500 strong. He came to the microphone, did Adam Schiff, and said, we've got the goods. We've got the evidence. In fact, he didn't have it. And neither did Bob Mueller. The best they could do was to try to say there was an obstruction of justice, somehow or some way, to which Attorney General Barr said, if there was no original crime, if there was no crime to begin with, how can it be obstruction? How could this president not get defensive and not try to defend himself strenuously if he's being unjustly accused? So that was finally put to rest back in July, right? No, he cheated. He colluded with Russia. They're still holding to that precious narrative. And that's why they've got to go forward with these articles of impeachment. Attorney General Barr, as I mentioned at the top, he had quite a lot to say yesterday. And I love how Mr. Barr, okay, he lets the Attorney General, or rather the Inspector General's report come out Monday. There's the rush to report on it, the media getting a lot of it wrong, as you would expect. And of course, congratulating themselves like Jim Comey did. The truth is out. People owe me an apology. And oh, by the way, the Attorney General should lead the way. Mr. Barr should lead the way. And so the very next day, William Barr goes not to Fox News, not to Newsmax or Sinclair. He goes right to NBC. He sits down with an NBC reporter for almost a half an hour. And he tells you a little something about all of these irregularities, about all of these matters of protocol, these rules that were broken at the FBI, how that the FISA court was lied to. There have to be quite a few people involved in that so-called investigation that are getting a little bit nervous as they listen to America's chief law enforcement official. Here's the Attorney General yesterday with an NBC News reporter, clip four.
Well, I think I think probably from a civil liberty standpoint, the greatest danger to our free system is that the incumbent government use the apparatus of the state, principally the law enforcement agencies and the intelligence agencies, both to spy on political opponents, but also to use them in a way that could affect the outcome of the election. As far as I'm aware, this is the first time in history that this has been done to a presidential campaign, the use of these counterintelligence techniques against a presidential campaign.
So what he's saying there is that this was the incumbent, that would be Obama, the Obama presidency, using the law enforcement agencies and the intelligence agencies to not just spy on their political opponents, but to do it in a way that could affect the outcome of the election. In other words, they meddled in the election. In other words, they're guilty of what they accuse this president of. Jonathan Turley made a similar point. He was talking about a slightly different subject, the impeachment sham. But he testified in Congress, the Judiciary Committee, last week. Remember, they got all the scholars, the lawyers, the constitutional scholars last week. And then this week it was the lawyers. And now they just know for sure. Of course, he should be impeached. But listen to what Jonathan Turley said last week in his testimony, clip five.
If you impeach a president, if you make a high crime and misdemeanor out of going to the courts, it is an abuse of power. It's your abuse of power. You're doing precisely what you're criticizing the president for doing. We have a third branch that deals with conflicts of the other two branches. And what comes out of there and what you do with it is the very definition of legitimacy.
There is such a thing as congressional abuse of power, and that's what we're seeing in the United States right now. Congress abusing its power. The House of Representatives abusing its power with this partisan witch hunt, this partisan impeachment sham headed up by left-wing zealots, Barack Obama sycophants, all of them. And they've put together this monstrous case based upon lies, based upon fabrications, fraud. It's a conspiracy. So Adam Schiff, never mind what Mr. Turley testified there. He gets in front of the microphone yesterday and again, a very somber setting. They're doing this only because they have to, only because of their sense of duty. Mr. Schiff said, clip six.
Americans don't get to decide American elections anymore, not by themselves, not without foreign help. For the members of Congress, this is not a question of fact because the facts are not seriously contested. It is rather a question of duty.
The facts are not contested, he says. Not one fact witness among all 17, 18, whatever it was, not one fact witness, well, maybe one, Sondland, but he cleared the president. Not one fact witness. And then he says before that, here again, Americans don't get to decide American elections anymore. There's just cheating from President Trump. It happened in 2016, and it happened in 2020. So we've got to do this. It's our duty. And then the president leaves the White House, heads to Pennsylvania. People flock to this arena. Tens of thousands of Americans. The parody, I forget which website it was at. House Dems unveil surefire plan to get Trump reelected. That's really what it was yesterday. With Nadler and Schiff and Pelosi. It's a surefire plan to get this president reelected. As the president himself said last night, the Democrats who vote for impeachment, or at least those in the swing states, at least those in Republican districts that Donald Trump won in 2016, if they vote for impeachment, they might as well be voting against their own reelection. So much is being exposed, and so much, truthfully, is exposed in that 450-page report from Monday. There have been quite a few hard-hitting commentaries now that people have had a couple of days to digest the contents. The Wall Street Journal, the editorial board, Mr. Schiff and Democrats called the Nunes memo false, and weeks later released a rival summary of the classified FISA evidence. Remember that history? This is less than 2 years ago. Remember when Nunes was coming out with that memo and they did everything that they could, the Democrats, together with the media, to try to stop it, to try to prevent it from going out. And then it went out, and then Schiff had to produce his version. He saw the same FISA evidence that Nunes had seen. But yet you have two very different memos. The journal says here, the third line of the Schiff memo reads, FBI and DOJ officials did not abuse the FISA process, omit material information, or subvert the vital tool to spy on the Trump campaign. The journal says, that's false. The IG report lists the many and varied ways the FBI did all of those. So we now know which memo told the truth and which memo was full of lies. And keep in mind that the author of the memo with all the fabrications, the author of the fraudulent memo, is heading up the impeachment proceeding. How about that? The journal says this includes overstating Mr. Steele's credibility, omitting concerns about his sources, hiding exculpatory information, and even doctoring a document. The IG is concerned enough by the extensive compliance failures that he says he has begun oversight to assess FBI compliance with policies that seek to protect the civil liberties of U.S. persons. This is from the Wall Street Journal today. It says the Schiff memo also claimed that DOJ cited multiple sources to support the case for surveilling Page, but made only narrow use of the information from Steele's sources about Page's specific activities in 2016. False again. False again. The Schiff memo. The journal says the Horowitz report says the FBI considered surveilling Mr. Page in August 2016, but decided it lacked probable cause. The Bureau moved ahead with its FISA application after it received the Steele dossier, the dirty dossier. It got that on September 19th. This is all in the IG report from Monday. Once they got the dirty dossier, then they were able to go to the FISA court and get the warrant to spy on Carter Page. It says here, the report says the dossier played a central and essential role in that decision. Mr. Horowitz says the part of the application detailing Mr. Page's 2016 activities relied entirely on information from Steele reports. It says Mr. Schiff had access to the same documents as Mr. Nunes. His decision to misinterpret the FBI's actions shows he's willing to distort the truth for political purposes. He gets away with this because he has a willing echo chamber in the Washington press corps. He gets away with it. He got away with the lies back in February, March 2018, and he gets away with it today. Yesterday, he resurrected the Russia collusion narrative. Yesterday, he said that Donald Trump cheated in 2016. And the media, well, they barely bat an eye. They love it. They love it when the narrative changes. They love it when there's new fabrications that they can take and run with, as long as it takes down their political enemy. Molly Hemingway at The Federalist. Listen to this. It's just devastating. IG report confirms Schiff FISA memo, media praised, was riddled with lies. Now, they heaped scorn on Nunes, remember. He was evil. He needed to be removed from office. He was telling lies. And then Schiff comes out with his memo, and the media loved it. They loved the material in that memo. Hemingway says the media joined Department of Justice bureaucrats in bitterly opposing the release of the Nunes memo. The Justice Department released a letter to the press saying the action was extraordinarily reckless. The Justice Department didn't like it either. This is before Attorney General Barr showed up. So you have the deep state. They're shocked that Nunes would come out with bits and pieces of the truth. We've got to conceal this. We've got to keep it from ever seeing the light of day. The Justice Department said it would be damaging to national security. It would risk damage to our intelligence community or to the important work it does in safeguarding the American people. Translation is that it would make us look really bad for spying on the Trump campaign, for trusting in the Steele dossier, for lying to the FISA court. Hemingway says then when the report was released, the media made a variety of contradictory claims, all of them downplaying or dismissing the memo as nothing whatsoever. So they couldn't stop the memo from going out. The Justice Department tried, the media tried, the Democrats tried to prevent Nunes's memo from going out. Then it goes out, and here's how the Democrats and the Democrat media complex responded. Why were the Democrats so worried about the Nunes memo, asked the New Yorker. There's nothing to it. Rachel Maddow said that far from destroying national security, instead the memo delivered a sad trombone for Trump. It's a joke and a sham, claimed Washington Post writers. CNN had their good buddy James Clapper and Obama intelligence chiefs say that the memo was a blatant political act. John Brennan, Obama's CIA chief, who was also implicated in the spying on the Trump campaign, told Politico that the memo was exceptionally partisan. Politico claimed the memo makes no sense. And what did we learn on Monday? With the 450-page Inspector General's report, we learned, among other things, that Nunes was telling the truth and that it was Adam Schiff who was lying. You'll remember what we wrote in the Trumpet. My father had a fair bit to say about the Nunes memo. This is from April of 2018. He said a law enforcement source, he's getting this from what Nunes wrote. My father says a law enforcement source fed information to the media, and then the law enforcement agencies used the media's stories as proof of its claims. The media wrote stories about these claims, which law enforcement agencies used as even more proof to renew the warrant. Law enforcement and media formed an echo chamber. So the mainstream media has been complicit in this lawless plot. They continually give credibility to this nonsense. It's like the Wall Street Journal editorial board brings out. They get away with it. because of a willing echo chamber in Washington, in the New York media. Well, for those interested in the facts, if you're willing to just go back 2 years, well, let's look at what was in the memo. Let's look at what was in both memos, and let's consider what was produced now in the IG report, headed up by an Obama appointee. Well, there's going to be more revelations. The Federalist had another piece about how that the IG report reveals that James Comey lied on Fox News about the Steele dossier. He was asked by Brett Baer just last year, a little over a year ago, April 2018, he was asked, Brett Baer asked him if he, when he first learned that the DNC and Hillary Clinton had funded Christopher Steele's work. And Comey said, less than 18 months ago, he said, well, I still don't know. I still don't know that for a fact. I've heard it on press reports. I've heard it on the news. But I'm not even sure that's true, he told Brett Baer. And the report on Monday says that he learned that on October 12, 2016, and yet he told Brett Baer, almost 2 years later, I'm not even sure if that's a fact. I don't know if that's a fact. How many more of those kinds of lies are going to be revealed as people work their way through all the details uncovered in this internal review? Wait until we have an external review, or by that I mean someone like Durham who's able to go outside the DOJ and gather evidence from all kinds of sources. After his interview with NBC yesterday afternoon, the Attorney General, William Barr, he was interviewed at the Wall Street Journal CEO Council. I'm not sure what that is, but I think it was some kind of a gathering. And he had a sit-down with Jerry Baker, who's the editor of the Journal. And here's a little bit from that, clip 7.
The real meat of Horowitz's work and the real thrust of the report actually deals with the conduct of the investigation. Where I think it quickly became apparent that it was a travesty. And there were many abuses. And that's by far the most important part of the report.
That's all in the report. So you have what Horowitz says is, okay, I don't have any evidence to suggest that they shouldn't have started the investigation. But as Barr brings out, if you go through the 400 and some odd pages, what you read about largely is the conduct of the FBI, of the DOJ. And it quickly becomes apparent that it was a travesty. So many abuses. That's the most important takeaway here. Now, as he made it clear when he posted his reaction Monday to those conclusions of Horowitz that the investigation started with proper evidence. He made it clear he didn't agree with that, but he made it clear yesterday there's a lot in the report he absolutely agrees with. For example, the many abuses that have been exposed. Here he is explaining the part that he disagrees with in the Horowitz report, clip 8.
And where I disagree with Mike is I just think this was very flimsy. This was a comment made by a 28-year-old volunteer in a campaign in a bar offhand, which was described as a suggestion of a suggestion.
Right.
There he's talking about the comment overheard by Papadopoulos and the start of Crossfire Hurricane, the counterintelligence investigation. Kevin Brock at The Hill, he spells it out this way. The FBI, this is how it all got started back in the summer of 2016. The FBI received a notification from a friendly country, which is known to be Australia, that a Trump campaign advisor, George Papadopoulos, had received a suggestion from Russia that it could assist the campaign by releasing information damaging to Mrs. Clinton. That was it. Brock says, that's the justification. Here's what that thin predication was adequate for in the FBI I grew up in. This is a former FBI official himself, Kevin Brock. And he says, had this happened when I was working at the FBI, here's what would have happened. Here's how we would have responded. He writes, an agent from a field office, not headquarters, would have contacted Mr. Papadopoulos, interviewed him to get more details, enlisted his cooperation against the Russians, if warranted, and that would have been it. Instead, an investigative team of top officials at FBI headquarters who disliked Trump very much received this information that happened to threaten Trump's rival, Hillary Clinton, and so initiated a full investigation with every intrusive investigative tool available to be used against the Trump campaign. It says, normally the FBI starts a less intrusive preliminary investigation first, especially with such flimsy information, but not in this case. One wonders what explains such eagerness. How could you get to the end of all of this devastating evidence and conclude that there was no political bias? I think that's something that Mr. Barr and Mr. Durham are going to disagree with in the end as well. But this Brock, Kevin Brock, he says it's important that we understand how unprecedented this was in the history of the FBI. This is not the way the FBI is supposed to conduct itself. He says the abuse of Carter Page by his team at the top of the FBI is unconscionable. By this team, rather, at the top of the FBI. These were the leaders at the FBI. This wasn't farmed out to any field office. This was FBI headquarters right in the middle of the swamp, right in the middle of Washington, D.C., headed up by Comey himself, Andy McCabe, Peter Strzok, Lisa Page. The abuse of Carter Page by this team at the top of the FBI is unconscionable. The report is troubling to read for anyone who has been part of that storied institution. Well, Carter Page had a column himself at the Wall Street Journal saying how that his reputation has been ruined, his life threatened. He feels like he's living as a fugitive, moving from place to place. He talked about how that congressmen back in the 1970s, fearing these kinds of abuses, they established the FISA Court in 1978 in order to prevent this sort of thing from happening. But it didn't protect me, he said. And those surveillance powers have grown exponentially since the 1970s. Mr. Horowitz's report identified at least 17 significant errors or omissions in the application for a surveillance warrant against me. His civil liberties, Mr. Page, totally violated. You would think, I mentioned the point about humility and these officials like Mr. Comey coming out with their op-ed piece. He had his ready. He had his op-ed ready within an hour or two of the report coming out on Monday, and nothing in there. What about a simple apology to Carter Page for all of these mistakes, for all of these are Horowitz's words, not mine, significant errors or omissions, and that's being nice about it. In fact, lies and deceit, fabrications, flagrant discrepancies, fraud. We've seen so many lives destroyed. 17 significant errors or omissions? If you look at Roger Stone or who's the other general? Mr. Flynn. They make one false statement to the FBI. Papadopoulos, one false statement, he's off to jail. Flynn's awaiting his sentencing. You can't do that to the FBI, says Peter Strzok, Jim Comey, Andy McCabe. And meanwhile, 17 significant errors and omissions in these FISA court applications? In the application for a surveillance warrant to spy on an American citizen? Well, Barr went on to discuss all the problems with this crossfire hurricane. Here again is what he said at that Wall Street Journal CEO council last night, clip 9.
From my experience, the normal thing to do in this kind of situation, and I have had an analogous experience here, is to go to the campaign. And here, I don't think there's a legitimate explanation for why they didn't, especially because they went to the Russians.
Right. They went and confronted the Russians, the Obama people, and they said nothing to the Trump campaign. They kept it completely quiet. And he said the protocol here would be, if you got a tip, as flimsy as it was, to go and talk to Papadopoulos and then to go and mention it to the Trump campaign. That didn't happen. Listen as he continues, clip 10.
If your purpose was to protect the election, then you would have done a defensive briefing here, because the chances of people like Sessions or Chris Christie being in cahoots with the Russians were pretty minimal. But if there was stuff going on, then by going in, you brace them and you disrupt the activity in time to protect the election. But it just doesn't hold water, because on August 4th, they contacted the head of Russian intelligence and said, we know what you're up to. You better stop it. They did again in later August, and President Obama did it directly in September. So it doesn't strike me as plausible that you would tell the Russians, who clearly were guilty of interference, but you wouldn't go and talk to the campaign. That makes no sense.
That's him explaining that in August 4th, Brennan contacts Russian intelligence and says, hey, we know you're meddling, so knock it off. And then in September, Barack Obama, he calls out Russia as well. Yes, I've dealt with this. I told them to knock it off. And then who can forget? In October, you've got August, September, now October. And who can forget what Barack Obama said just weeks before the election about Russian meddling? Clip 11.
There is no serious person out there who would suggest somehow that you could even rig America's elections, in part because they're so decentralized and the numbers of votes involved. There's no evidence that that has happened in the past, or that there are instances in which that will happen this time.
And Adam Schiff made that claim yesterday. He resurrected the Russia collusion narrative. He said that Donald Trump cheated. He rigged the election with Russia's help. And now he's trying to rig 2020 with Ukraine's help. That's how the Republicans are able to win. But what you heard there, that's Barack Obama back when they all thought Hillary would win. And he went on to say to President Trump, look, you better stop calling into question the legitimacy of U.S. elections. I'd advise you to go out and get some votes. And guess what? Donald Trump did that. And he won on November 8th, 2016. And then they came up with this plan. It was the insurance plan, Peter Strzok called it, to take him out anyway. The big headline, December 9th. Secret CIA assessment says Russia was trying to help Trump win. December 9th, 2016. And then the Horowitz report comes out, as it happens, on the same day. December 9th, 2019. 3 years of this. 3 years of it. And of course, what sprung from that announcement on December 9th, 2016 was the so-called intelligence review, and then it was attached to the dossier, the dirty dossier. And then 3 years on from it, Monday, December 9th, 2019, we learned that the Steele dossier was just a total fraud, and yet the FBI relied on it totally, exclusively, to get a warrant to surveil Carter Page, to spy on Carter Page. The Horowitz report, we're not even to the Durham report yet. The Horowitz report, a man appointed by Obama himself. 3 years on, 3 years after this total fraud, this monstrous fraud, this hit job, this conspiracy, this plot to take down a president. Finally, it's exposed as the sham that it is. And I'm sure there's more exposure to come. We'll have to reserve what's left here in my notes for another time. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.